Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill, employee-owned and operated, and founded on the principle of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Today's episode 86 of Feast Your Ears, and in the studio with me is the first of what I hope will be a long line of political interviews. Omar Vaid is running for the New York 11 congressional seat, currently occupied by Dan Donovan. The district covers all of Staten Island and the southern part of Brooklyn, including Bay Ridge. Staten Island is an island of red in a sea of blue that is the greater New York area. Omar plans to change that.
Yeah, that's right. For having me.
Omar's a union member, following in the footsteps of his father, who was also a union member. And Omar believes that immigrants and unions both make this country stronger, and that people like Donald Trump and Steve Bannon are working against, not for, the American dream.
That is correct.
Thanks, Omar, for joining me.
Thank you. Just to touch base on unions, if you have Spectrum, pull the plug and honor Local 3, which has been on strike for over 200 days.
Thank you. Yeah. So I would love to talk a little bit about your background and then what led you to sort of throwing your hat in the ring, so to speak, to join the congressional race. I feel like for me, growing up and, you know, becoming, when I turned 18 and starting to vote and feeling like it was important to vote in every election that I possibly could, running for office was never something I ever thought about.
Same here.
So what brought you to throwing your hat in the ring for
I'm not a politician, just a totally regular guy, not a lawyer. And I'm a Muslim American of Indian heritage. I've lived here in Brooklyn pretty much my entire adult life with my partner, Mary. We have two rescue dogs. And I'm a union worker, an IATSE member in the film industry. And after the presidential election, I started to feel like I might have something unique to offer in politics.
I mean, I think that's great. And that, to me, is sort of part of the American dream, right? That you do have something, that someone does have something unique to offer. My kids have become obsessed with the musical Hamilton. We have not seen it live, but they can sing all the songs. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking a great deal at home about the founding fathers and how the sort of country came together. And, you know, they weren't politicians either, right?
We were very lucky, our country, in having these awesome founding fathers who believed in secular government, very much democratic ideals, keeping the church out, and focusing on our Constitution and this wonderful document. It was, you know, so carefully crafted. And
yeah, if you do get elected, also, you will be, I believe, is it the third Muslim American member of Congress? Is
that's
that correct?
Right. Yeah.
And your family is Indian.
Yeah, Gujarati.
Yeah. And your parents, you're second generation? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. My parents are immigrants. Yeah. And, of course, that is a major thing, too. It's the to protect immigrants right now, to protect Muslims, Jews. I mean, just to protect everyone. Excuse me. And so, yeah, there's a the thing that I'm excited about talking about is especially immigrants and the type of food they bring.
Absolutely.
And we benefit so much from that every day. So.
Yeah, certainly. So when you were growing up, I mean, you grew up first outside Chicago in Glenview, Illinois. Mm-hmm. Was that a place that had a lot of Indian food?
I probably was the only Indian in my school.
All right.
Probably the only one. And I guess I never thought about it. I was always treated, you know, my schoolmates were all diverse, and it never really occurred to me. I mean, of course, I guess, you know, you look different. It's an identity thing. But I was always, yeah, treated incredibly well and was on the basketball team and just totally normal, all-American.
Sure. You know. And then later you lived in Jupiter, Florida.
That's right, Palm Beach
so
County.
So a little different than Chicago.
Yeah.
Certainly different weather.
Yeah, very close to Mar-a-Lago.
Okay.
and so I got to see how that Palm Beach, wealthy sort of country club type live, and it's very interesting. I would say there's a lot of talk about taxes.
Yeah.
Tax relief.
Yeah, sure. You bring up taxes. I listened to the mayoral debate last night. There was a lot of talk about taxes and surpluses and budgets and things like that going on. I don't know if you listened to the debate. I found it very interesting that it was very New York to listen to. Everyone talked really fast in the debate and their answers.
Rapid fire.
Which I feel like is not, you know, watching the, I felt a little bit, you know, back during the presidential debate season that they talked really slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that we in New York talk really fast.
Quick. Yeah. Quick wit.
As far as taxes go, people who, I guess, would identify as more wealthy, we're talking more about taxes. Mm-hmm. But taxes also affect immigrants.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And also, of course, immigrants pay their fair share.
Yeah. I mean, or under the new tax plan, more.
Yeah. Well, unless if you make over $800,000, I think you start to see a dollar off your taxes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you will pay more. Yeah. But, there's a there was a Steve in the White House. They were just recently busted that they were trying to hide bury a document that proved immigrants put in over $100 billion over a decade toward the economy, that they don't draw away. They benefit us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was looking before the interview also researching some statistics on unions in New York. Mm-hmm. And the sort of, I think that a lot of people, when they hear unions and when unions get trotted out on the national political stage, mm-hmm. certainly it's a lot of white males.
That's right.
But in New York City, that has actually changed a lot over the last couple of decades.
Absolutely.
There is a much higher percentage of union members who are not white.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, minorities and, of course, are represented very heavily in unions. It's very diverse. And what I love about unions is that they don't care necessarily what you look like. They care if you can do the job. It's a hard job to be a type of rigging electrician or a Teamster. And if you can do it, you're okay.
I mean, one of the things that Mayor de Blasio mentioned last night in one of his answers in the debate had to do with the fact that when he started, most city workers weren't under contract.
Right.
And now they all are.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, he's been very good.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of de Blasio. Yeah. So I have to protect de Blasio.
Yes, indeed. Well, and I think he's working to protect us to a certain extent, right? I mean,
I
think that, New York is an interesting has an interesting relationship to the rest of the country in that I think lots of people look to us for a lot of things and to be kind of leaders. And yet we also kind of can decide that we want to make changes in different ways. Some of those being food related, right?
Oh, absolutely.
The New York Department of Education is the second largest spender on food behind the U.S. military in the United States.
That's amazing.
And they've made some great changes. Yeah. So I think there's a lot to be said for that. Let's talk about food.
Yeah, let's do it.
But let's talk about, growing up. I mean, was food a part of your immigrant experience as far as maintaining a connection to culture?
Absolutely. As a kid, I wanted pizza and my parents wanted to cook biryani, and I was like, great, well, we can't have pizza. And so I grew up like that. It wasn't until I got older. I looked back in college and said, God, I'd like to eat at my parents' house again.
Right.
Which happens sometimes. And so for us, it was I always like to say, like, my parents are, I guess, more in the Pakistani cuisine, which is just the difference is meat is usually Pakistani. Often Indian cooking is truly vegetarian. And ghee, the butter, emulsified butter is like a big part of why Indians don't live sometimes there's a joke, we don't live past 50 because of ghee.
I hadn't heard that. I had the chef from Babuji.
Yeah.
On the show a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about the use of different regional Indian ingredients, but I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, my parents were like, oh my God, we have to stop using ghee because of cholesterol. They become American immediately. Oh my God, cholesterol, I can't no more ghee. And then I'm very against too spicy, which is, you think I'm crazy.
Yeah, but I thought that was interesting when that you mentioned to me earlier that, that your one pet peeve about food was that it was too spicy.
I was in South Africa. I have a whole family there, and they made this amazing, like, these gigantic 6-inch prawns on the grill, and they were so spicy I couldn't take one bite, and that was it. I couldn't eat anymore.
Well, and I think there's also, I mean, that wasn't in America, but I think there's an American obsession with, like, the hottest of the hot sauce and how hot is this pepper and how,
I reject that.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I mean, it's not, I once in my 20s went to a Thai restaurant with a couple of other people, and we had, we were a couple beers in before we sat down for dinner, and definitely kind of got into this,
like, oh, I can eat spicier food because I grew up eating, you know, Mexican food in San Francisco. I can eat spicier food because I'm from Texas. Yeah. We got into this whole thing. And of course, we turned to the waitress and we said, make it as spicy as you can, which was really stupid. I mean, that was just not... Yeah. It was not an enjoyable culinary experience.
You know, when I eat with my my Irish American friends, the blandness of the food, I find that comforting.
Sure,
because I grew up around too spicy, so I want it to be as bland as, you know, Irish bar food, please. So,
and you mentioned that, you know, so you used to live in Bay Ridge.
I'm a former resident of Bay Ridge.
And that you know, should you win the Democratic primary for the seat, that you'll be moving to Staten Island.
I will move to Staten Island.
And the very first thing that you said to me as we were conversing before the show was actually where you're going to get to eat when
yes.
you do that. I mean, so you originally moved to Bay Ridge for the food.
Yeah, there's a whole thing of Bay Ridge nativism, of course, which is like the honor of having been born in Bay Ridge and Staten Island. There's the same thing. And I actually sought it out, that I found out Bay Ridge was where the best Lebanese food was to be found, the finest, you know, there's wonderful Italian food. So for me, I became this food tourist, like many of us in the city, like, you know, we've talked about. And I was drawn to all this, that, you know, I can choose every night between Turkish or Arabic or Italian. And that was it. I moved to Bay Ridge for food. Yeah.
I mean, I'd never thought about it in that way. But I think that's one of the reasons I moved to New York City, aside from the nightlife and the opportunity to go to museums and sort of all these things. And for, you know, at the time it was $1.50, you could go anywhere in the city or whatever. You know, the opportunity to eat all these different foods and to live even in a neighborhood like Williamsburg, where we both live, where, you know, you can have Japanese food one night and you can have killer pizza the next night. And then, you know, you can go and you can eat the delicious food at the Brooklyn Star and have Kino's Texas style, you know, stuff. And
you can get it all. Yeah. And it's and when you go back home, you know, like in my case, we go back to, you know, some part of Florida, it's not the same.
Yeah.
As, you know, we're also, the things you find in Queens, it's just, there's so many varieties of food.
Absolutely. So. Well, we're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here at Heritage Radio. And when we come back, we will keep talking about food.
Great.
I don't think there's anybody worthy to run this company but the people who built it. I have employees who've been with me for more than 30 years and plus. Each and every one of them deserves to be an owner. That's just the way it ought to be, and that's just the way it is.
This is Bob Moore. He and his wife Charlie started Bob's Red Mill almost four decades ago. Today, they offer one of the largest lines of organic whole grain foods in the country. And in 2010, on his 81st birthday, Bob gifted ownership of the company to his employees.
I'd received plenty of offers to buy my company over the years, but selling out never felt like the right thing to do. When the time comes to let someone else run this show, I can't imagine selling it to a stranger. Giving the company to my hardworking employees just feels right.
The company now has an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP. Stock is put in a retirement plan for all of its employees. When employees retire, the company buys back their shares. According to the National Center for Employee Ownership, about 11,000 companies in the U.S. currently run as ESOPs.
It just shows how much faith and trust Bob has in us.
That's Bo Thomas, the company's engineer and maintenance superintendent. He's been with Bob's Red Mill for over 27 years and has put his four children through college in the process.
For all of us, it's more than just a job. And obviously, it's the same way for Bob, too.
Bob is still very active in the company. He's the president and CEO, and you'll find him working at the mill just about every day. Because when you love something this much, you want to be a part of it.
Well, I may have given them the company, but the boss part is still mine.
Bob's Red Mill is committed to sharing only the freshest, best-tasting whole grain foods on the planet. Learn more about their mission of good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Thank you. Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum. Today, I'm pleased to have Omar Vaid in the studio with me here behind Roberta's. Omar is running for Congress here in New York and is hoping to become the representative for the New York District 11, which, if you weren't listening earlier, includes all of Staten Island and a part of South Brooklyn, including Bay Ridge. So before the break, Omar, we were talking about food and, of course, and immigrants. And you mentioned to me about a Sri Lankan restaurant.
That's right. Yeah.
In Staten Island that you know of. I can't say that I've ever eaten Sri Lankan food, so I really want to know more about it so I can go check it out.
Yeah, so this is great. Take the Staten Island ferry, and you'll have a great time. It's one of the finest views of the Statue of Liberty, incredibly close to. And it's a Lackawanna. Which is 668 Bay Street, and it's one of the finest Sri Lankan restaurants. You'll be greeted by these massive golden doors, and when these doors open to you, you're going to find like stunning, wood carved everything. Like the menu is this gigantic three foot piece of carved wood with it's printed on the back. I mean, it's like breathtaking, the detail. And the New Yorker covered it. There's a museum in the basement now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Staten Island has the largest Sri Lankan population. It's lucky to have. And the Sunday buffet is amazing.
Oh, that sounds... that sounds like a great Sunday. I mean, having lived in New York a long time, I feel like Sunday mornings, I think of two different things. I either think of, like, bagel and lox, you know, or, like, smoked fish spread, kind of like Russ and Daughter style, or dim sum. Those are like my two like New York, like, oh, what are we doing Sunday morning? Oh, let's get dim sum or like, let's, you know, get some smoked fish. But this sounds awesome because you can take the ferry, get a, you know, nice like boat ride, which, you know, if you have kids, I like a boat ride too, but my kids love a boat ride.
And these big orange boats are beautiful. And then you'll find egg curry, which is, I had never had deviled chicken, papadum, and for dessert, a gooseberry mousse. And then the lamb rice. It's rice, meatballs, curry, lentils wrapped in a banana leaf and then baked.
Wow.
And when it opens, it steams.
Oh, it sounds so good.
The banana. Yeah.
So also sounds like a place you want to go with a group. It's not like, it'd probably be fun for a date, but might be more fun with a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. If you have six or whatever, it's even more fun to do this thing where you get to Staten Island and you do this walk down there. And it's a really fun thing. And I know a lot of New Yorkers, it's a chance to do all that, ride the boat and everything. And then if you're lucky enough, if you're into Italian, on the South Shore is some of the finest Italian food. Yeah. And so there's Patricia's, which we have one. There's a Patricia's in Brooklyn.
Yep.
But there's also one in South Shore, Staten Island. And Giuliana's is another one. Hmm. And these you'll find, at Giuliana's, you'll find like a pappardelle prosecco, the long flat pasta, and it's sautéed with grapes, raisins, and a champagne cream sauce.
Nice.
And the gnocchi a la cognac, potato pasta with cognac truffle sauce, diced chicken, mushrooms, and mozzarella.
Rad.
Yeah, so
Staten Island also has a special place in my heart as far as food goes. It was the first place that I ever... went foraging for morel mushrooms.
Oh, for real!
I had a friend who took me foraging in a secret location in Staten Island.
It's very
for
woodsy.
Morels this past spring, and I met him in a parking lot, and we start walking through the woods, and suddenly we came upon this like great spot that was full of these delicious morel mushrooms.
So also the South Shore of Staten Island is incredibly. There's a huge woodsland.
Yeah,
it's very woodsy. For hiking, and you're in New York City, but you'll see a deer go by.
And not for nothing. Right. I mean, when I was a kid, Staten Island was known as being where all the garbage went because it did, right? I mean, we had a big landfill there, but that's not true anymore.
No.
And that's now closed and is now a beautiful park.
Yeah. So there's these incredible, there's camps and incredible parks. And so, it's amazing urban foraging.
Yeah. it was a lot of fun. I'm curious to know how food fits into your campaign or how you see it fitting in. I mean, I think there's sort of two sides to it. I definitely, there's lots of political dramas on TV. And so you see these people jet setting around and running from thing to thing and drinking tons of coffee. And, and I have to imagine that it's hard, right, to eat. It's like being on the road if you're doing film and television. You've got to find food where you can.
Well, it's amazing because you can go, you can go to the halal restaurant in Staten Island and sit with all your constituents and talk, you know, to that specific community. And then go the bridge, the Verrazano, right on the other side is Bay Ridge.
Yep.
You'll find Pane Antico, another amazing Italian place, famous for bread.
So it sounds like you're going to be actually eating a lot.
I'm going to gain 20, hopefully gain 20 pounds. Yeah.
I mean, what a great way to bring people together, right? I mean, that is the natural way to do it. Yeah. You know, I always have found these sort of political rallies, while, you know, they are a good photo op and it allows you to speak to a large group of people at once. They always feel to me a little like they can be kind of disingenuous, mm-hmm. and it's really one-sided, right?
Yep.
I mean, it is. It's just, you know, stump speeching, you know, and kind of talking at people, where if you sit down to a meal or even just a cup of coffee with a bunch of people, that's much more valuable.
Yeah, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And I think it should be fun. It shouldn't, you know, it should be out there. You're having fun. And then, of course, we talk about bringing people together, which is like unity is the most important thing right now. You know, we're divided in many ways. And the immigrant experience and the food and something you've never tasted or heard of and trying to figure out how to cook it. And you know, it's sort of accepting that your neighbor in such a positive way.
Right.
And it's especially like in Bay Ridge, you have Tanurin, which is an incredible Arabic restaurant. And again, Pane Antico. And then you have amazing Turkish like Hazar. And so, for me, chicken shawarmas are something that's very, like, very important to me. And so, being able to find all this stuff is definitely wonderful.
Do you, because I hope that you do, in fact, become elected. When you get to Washington.
When elected.
When you get to Washington. How do you see your role as a New Yorker, but also as a member of a voting body that's making decisions for the larger country?
Like a New Yorker in Congress?
Yeah. Like what is your role? Obviously, you know, I was looking back at the current Congressman Dan Donovan's record on voting, and, you know, obviously you are voting as a representative of New York State, but there are sometimes issues that come up that either are more important or less important to New Yorkers.
For us, I would say the biggest one is like on the South Shore of Staten Island, we're talking about all these amazing Italian restaurants. And a lot like, one of my constituents, Jill in Staten Island, has a 2-hour commute each way.
Wow.
And so to me, bringing another ferry to the South Shore, improvements in mass transit to Brooklyn and the Staten Island side, I don't want to buy Texas a new wall.
Right.
I think if Texas is free to build a wall, but they should pay for it. Yeah. And I'm so thrilled to give Texas help with a hurricane relief without question, any dollar they need. But they should build their own wall. And Dan Donovan, who I'm running against, and Michael Grimm, who may challenge him, they think, you know, they've already authorized $10 billion, the first amount of $67 billion. And, you know, we want the R train and the N train and to all run spectacularly.
Yeah.
And then we can get to our food quicker.
Yeah.
So, like,
and that came up a lot last night in the mayoral debate. That's like a $400 million cost. So we're talking about a very small cost to, in fact, positively affect way more people, at least I believe, than building a wall on the Texas border.
So part of my campaign is talking to people in the South Shore, Staten Island, and all over that in the more red territory. You guys, you know, this fear of, I don't know, immigrants or Mexicans, whatever it is, it's holding us back from having that new ferry or that new train or that improvement or whatever can cut down on our commute. And again, Texas can pay for their own wall.
Right.
We shouldn't. I don't think we should pay for it.
I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And then how do you, how do you also take into consideration, you know, so it is representing those specific constituents, but then it's also representing to a certain extent what's right in the world.
Exactly. And also for New Yorkers, for climate action, so it's incredibly important for us. You know, we're surrounded by water.
Yeah.
And so Hurricane Sandy, you know, hit Staten Island very hard and, you know, a lot of Long Island.
Well, and those repercussions are ongoing. I mean, they're going to close the L train.
Yeah.
Which is going to affect, you know, those of us that live in this neighborhood.
Yeah, the R was devastated for a while because of Sandy. And so, we want climate action. We want to seize on the economic opportunity of solar and wind and the future. And so being a New Yorker, I think, would be amazing, you know, that to bring these New York values of, we're all very accepting. We live very close to each other. We live very efficiently. And I think that's it's key to have. Yeah.
I've always had this theory, and I've never, you know, I've never been able to kind of test it or bear it out. But I've always had this theory that New Yorkers or people that live in like major urban areas are very similar, in fact, even though we often don't think of it that way, to people who live in rural places, mm-hmm. and that we are more similar to one another than either group is similar to people who live in the suburbs. and one of the what I mean by that, and one of the reasons I sort of theorized this has to actually came from waiting for the subway.
I got to
hear
it.
And sort of feeling like, and now it's very different. I mean, this is going back almost 20 years when you didn't know when the train was coming.
Right.
Right? So you got down to the platform and you were on your way somewhere and it's like, well, I'm here until the train shows up and I get on it and it takes me where I need to go. And I am beholden to some other force. Mm-hmm. That particular force happened to be the MTA. Mm. Right? And if you live in a very rural place, you are beholden to things like the weather.
Yeah.
That you can't, you know, or if you are, say, a farmer and you were going to go out and harvest and you know that it's going to pour rain tomorrow, you either have to do it today or you have to wait to do it another time. And that you are being affected by that, where my sort of sense, and I don't mean this to anyone who loves the suburbs and who lives there, but I don't mean any offense, but my sense of living in the suburbs is that you want full control and that you're like, well, I get to get out of my house with the air conditioning and I get in my car with the air conditioning and I drive to a parking space that's close to the mall and then I go into the mall with the air conditioning and that everything is under my sort of control to be the way I want my life.
Yeah.
And that there is something almost... I find it, you know, a little bit liberating to be like, well, here I am on this train platform and I have a book or I have something I'm working on or I have someone to talk to and I don't have to get worked up about the fact that the train isn't coming because it's out of my control.
Yeah, part of it, I think, is being stuck in a car, commuting in a car all day, and it probably makes you, you know, it makes you crazy.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, you're stuck in traffic and, you know, it aggravates you and all the anxiety.
Yeah.
And yeah, the suburbs are wonderful. But that, yeah, there's a lot of truth in that. That there's sort of a snap your finger and have it.
Yeah, you can have, and I mean, and we have that in the city now too, right? Sure. I mean, you can, you know, you get on your phone and you can have sushi delivered in you know, 15 minutes or whatever it is to wherever you're standing, and you can get a car to come and pick you up. So I mean, you know, there are these modern conveniences, but I still think there's something about the you know, the way it feels to be in close proximity, you know.
And we trust that the train's coming.
Right.
You know, we don't question it. It is going to come, you know? And so, yeah, why not just listen to your podcast or read the New Yorker? Yeah.
If you had someone who was coming to New York and they were coming tomorrow and they only had like 24 hours, so let's say they had three meals to eat in New York.
Three meals.
Where would you send them?
Where would I send them? Three meals. Mamafuku.
All right.
Definitely. Number two, Roberta's.
All right.
It's right in front of me.
Yep, here we are, watching out the window of the studio as people eat some really, really good-looking pizza.
And number three is Samurai Papa.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which I think is incredible.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and I think that way you get a little bit of, you know, maybe I favor the Asian, maybe.
Yeah,
But, yeah, I think that those are three amazing spots. How about for you?
Let's see. I would say definitely pizza of some sort. I would go a little further afield just because if it was someone who didn't spend a lot of time here, I feel like, you know, everyone's heard of Roberta's, but I might send someone to Coney Island to Totono's.
Oh, L&B or L&B Spumoni Gardens.
Spumoni's a good one too.
In Bensonhurst.
For sure.
Oh,
for sure.
God.
I wouldn't send them to DeFara's. Nothing against DeFara's. However, I don't like waiting in line for stuff. And so I don't want to tell someone who's only got a short amount of time in New York to go stand in line somewhere for like 3 hours. It seems like a waste of your like valuable time.
It's here. Like Grimaldi's. Part of life is just to wait.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't,
part
you know,
being a tourist.
Go to Totono's, go to L&B instead. And then I would say, Peter Luger's.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
For just like a completely like honest to goodness, New York experience.
Best steak in the world.
Yeah. I mean, just incredible steak in a great environment, in a great spot with a great story. I mean, the story of that restaurant is incredible.
Yeah.
And then for a third one, I would say somewhere in Queens, probably somewhere like Street Prop High, the Thai restaurant.
Oh, I've been there,
there.
Oh, it's amazing.
I mean, that place is incredible and is killer food. There's also a Tibetan restaurant that I don't remember the name of that's on Roosevelt in the 70s up there.
When you walk, it's just, you know, Romanian.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, things you see on every...
There's a Sarajevan restaurant that's by Kaufman Astoria Studios. I don't know if you ever do any work there, but there's a Sarajevan restaurant over there that has incredible burek.
You'll see Afghan food. I mean, as you walk, you'll just be like, oh my God, I've, you know, it's incredible. It's like being a food tourist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully, when you have your seat in Washington, you can maybe bring some representatives from other parts of the country to Staten Island or New York and do some like food tour stuff.
To see this unity in action.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that'd be really cool.
I think that'd be amazing.
Awesome. Well, we are just about out of time. I want to make sure that I give everybody your website, which is omarvaid.com. Mm-hmm. And you can go on there and you can check out what Omar is, you know, planning to do, what his platform is. You can donate some money to the campaign. You want to talk a minute about...
Well, we reject all corporate money, and Steve Bannon endorsed my opponent, so I need you to endorse me with $11. So that's all it is.
All right. So everybody should get on there. I mean, you know, if it were only, I mean, I hope that it is so easy, right? I mean, if I could get all my friends to each pay $11 to get rid of Steve Bannon, I mean, that would be amazing, right? Totally worth it.
If everyone put in $11, yeah, that would be it. There would be no big money in politics.
And you can follow Omar on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Omar Vaid. Mm-hmm. And do you have any events coming up that you want to mention? The primary is in June.
It's in June.
There's no date for it yet,
right? We have lots of time to lay groundwork. And just subscribe to our email list and get on Twitter and you'll see us. Yeah.
And especially if you live in Bay Ridge or Staten Island or you know people who do, definitely get the word out that, Omar is going to do nothing but good things for your neighborhood and for Staten Island. So
that is correct. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
That was awesome.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to Feast Your Ears. Big thank you to David Tadashore for engineering the show today. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Please take a moment to like the show on iTunes and reach out if you have any questions. You can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com. You can follow me on social media, @thefoodballer. Thanks very much, everyone. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.